being capable in your body and how you feel in your body is a really important way to feel like you can handle anything in life. To be able to like climb a mountain, to be able to like kick a soccer ball or whatever, it's like we're carrying around this bag of bones and fat and muscle and whatever. We should be able to really carry it.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 123 of the Man Happy Podcast. I'm Payman, and unfortunately, we don't have Mason here for this intro, but I'll just get right into it. As you guys know, please, please share this episode, leave us a review, leave us 5 stars. The first 10 people that email me, p@madhappy.com, are winning special prizes each week. So definitely keep that up. But really, really great episode this week. We have Alexi Pappas on the show. And for those that don't know, she was in the 2016 Olympics. But really, we cover a wide range of topics across mental health, across life, across family, across the future, uncertainty, drive, a bunch of things that we get to go pretty deep into. I also just want to shout out some of the other stuff that she's up to. Her book, Bravery, was recently adapted to a young adult version where she really dives into the loss she had when she was only 4 years old, losing her mother to suicide, her young adult life, her Olympic life, her life thereafter, all the ups and downs in between. So definitely check that out in the show notes. And she also has an amazing movie coming out next month, premiering in Austin, Texas, called Not an Artist. So we'll leave more information about that as well. But without further ado, please enjoy this episode with Alexi Pappas. Today, I'm joined by my friend,
Alexi Pappas.
Great to have you here today. How are you feeling?
I feel good today. I feel that this was a nice hour to be sitting down together because I've had a good chunk of my day already, but it's not over yet.
So. Yeah. For those listening, it is a Friday. So sometimes usually I would say like Fridays, I am pretty tired just like from a crazy week. And also we happened to open a store in New York last weekend. So getting back here and everything, but I think it's a good way to close out a strong week, and being able to talk in an open environment is always a good way to like ease maybe the tensions of the week.
Yes. It's like the exact hour where we are here together is like, it's the curb that goes from street to the sidewalk. We're like curbing into the weekend.
Yeah.
We're not in it yet. We're still on the, maybe we're going from sidewalk to road, because really the curb is still part of the sidewalk, right?
Yeah.
So the week is the sidewalk. We're on the curb or the driveway down to the road. Yeah. That is the weekend.
Yeah, it's a good curb for sure. But yeah, so nice to have you here. We met through a mutual friend, and I'm curious for you, like early, like childhood-wise, like we always do bring it back to the beginning days, but like are there like core memories you have of growing up, sort of setting that picture for us, and then getting into more stuff?
You can't choose what you remember, right? You just remember things. So it's not my fault that I remember these things. But I grew up in the Bay Area, and I grew up in the island city of Alameda, which is just sounds as silly as it felt to live there, because the Bay Area was very, it's an energetic place, but the island city of Alameda felt very sleepy. And I felt like I had the loudest family emotionally that lived on the island. My mom was, she was bipolar manic bipolar. And she, this is just the truth. She took her own life when I was 4. And so my early years were like confusing because she was not there very often. And when she was not in a hospital, it was wild. And so the memories I have 4 memories of her, and 3 of them are bad. And then the memories I have besides her felt like an overcompensatory effort to have what I really needed. So I would like play house and like do very basic things, or like I like to follow my dogs around because I think dogs have this like wonderful existence to just do whatever they want and they get taken care of. So that those are the kind of memories. There's a contrast.
Yeah, what do you mean by play house or play with your dogs? Like, how is that the opposite? Is it like the normalcy aspect of it, or what do you mean by that?
The dog memory I've been thinking about a lot because I used to eat a lot of my dog's wet food. And maybe I was like a weird kid. Yeah. And I remember my brother would tell on me, and we were home alone a lot. And I thought about it a lot more recently, and I was like, no, like, it's very possible that I like wanted the life of a dog because dogs just get to eat and play and be irresponsible, which is like what a child should be. But I wasn't allowed to be that way as a kid. So playing house is like you're recreating something that you want. And it was like super normcore playing house of like with a friend. It's like, you're the daughter, I'm the mom.
Yeah.
You will clean your room. And it's like you do fake cleaning of the room. Here's a prize. And it was like a marshmallow.
Yeah.
So you're just creating things that feel stable and nice and positive and simple when you don't have it. And maybe people who have it create the opposite. Maybe they create chaos and like angst elsewhere because you're always trying to like
have both.
I guess.
In some way.
I guess.
And is your brother older or younger?
My brother's older. He's 3.5 years, 4 grades older. He was a really like responsible brother. So he had to like drive me to practices and help, and he was a really good brother, but he's definitely very, like, protective in ways that it was almost like my dad and my brother wanted to make sure that I didn't end up being crazy. So, like, if I was doing things that seemed crazy, they would temper me down. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they did it with bad intentions. I think they just wanted me to be okay. And I was probably more inclined to be the theatrical one of all of us.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. And obviously being 4, you know, when your mom takes her own life, like I can't imagine that feeling. For you, like, it is interesting that you say you remember it so well, because like I was just trying to think, like, do I remember anything from when I was like 0 to 4? And like, I don't really. I was actually like born in Italy, and then I moved here when I was 6, and like I don't really remember anything from my time living there, which maybe that's a whole different story. But I guess I'm curious, like, what did that mean to you? You know, like, one, not having a mom, but then two, like you said, your relationship with your brother and dad sort of being defined by that as well when you were growing up. Like, what did you think then? And sort of how did that evolve as you got older and started growing up a little?
The truth is, like, I had a very... My dad was... He was amazing in so many ways. He was like an engineer, like could protect us and take care of us and provide these basics. But what he did not do was to talk to us about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't even know how my mom died exactly until I was in 7th grade. And my best friend told me, but everybody else already knew. And that's like horrifying when you realize like the whole island knows like how your mom died and you didn't know. But it made those memories retroactively make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
And I think with my dad and my brother, there was like a constant desire to protect each other. So we functioned more like a team. It wasn't like the dad does this, the brother does this, and whatever I was, do this. It was like, we got to get it done. Like the dinner has to get made. Someone has to get this there.
Yeah.
And what it felt like then was that I felt like jealous of people who had support in ways that I didn't necessarily have it, but I also felt capable. And it was like, for better or for worse, you will figure this, and this out. And usually relating to like girl stuff of like, how do girls have no hair on their legs? I must figure this out. I don't understand it. And I have hairy legs.
Yeah.
So it was like figuring things out felt like it was a little unfair that I had to do certain things on my own, but it wasn't that unfair. Like I had the perspective to know I was very lucky and capable. But I'll tell you the real effect I'm learning now was that I blocked out pain. very effectively. So like the things that I saw, the memories, first of all, they're very short. They're like 3-second memories, but they're like difficult. And I think what I'm learning is that when you see things that are unseeable, just like if somebody like hears a bunch of loud noises and then their hearing gets worse, it's the body recalibrates to moderate what you can take in. So I think I did not feel pain like a normal human did, which helps when you're a long distance runner. It helps when you're on teams with people and you need to be able to like handle people's craziness and not get thrown off. So I'm like an even person, but it hurts because you don't always make decisions where your intellect matches your feelings, because your feelings block pain that your intellect is maybe like, this might not be right. So it's gotten me into some trouble because I've ended up in situations that are not optimal for me, but I don't feel the pain of it. I only intellectually understand it's not great.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah.
I know that's a little esoteric to say, but
it makes sense, I guess. And definitely I could see how it would take a long time to realize that that was the effect also.
Well, you don't realize it until it hurts you, right?
And I mean, I do think that one positive, like the capable aspect, you know, I moved here when I was 6. So like my parents didn't speak English at the same time that we moved here. So like I have a similar memory, which is like having to figure things out on my own in some way, you know, and like help my parents also and these sorts of things. And I do think like you do have some of that feeling, and like for people it manifests in different ways. You do have some of like the jealousy feeling of like, oh, like, but this person, like they don't have to do any of that or whatever. But then on the other side, I do think I was like, I had this like agency of like, oh, I could control like my own path. And like, it's more like, oh, I saw myself do this at a young age. And like, you're already building confidence in yourself, which I do think is very hard to teach without like actual like hard things happening, you know? So,
well, it makes me think of like two things. Like one, like what is happiness really? Because happiness could be like, you can get happiness from lots of places and you can get it from accomplishing something. But isn't there such deep joy in the distance you went to get to somewhere? Like, meaning you start at A and you end up at letter F or whatever. Like, I wonder, is there more happiness in going from A to F than from A to B? Like, when you see yourself could go a distance. And you ask to start behind the start line or ahead of the start line or whatever it is. But if you do, isn't there some joy in watching yourself go a distance that you had to go?
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of it is about like the fulfillment piece, which I think is like one of the things you need to have happiness. I think like for me at least. And I think that the distance you went or like had to go through is like, if you had to put in a lot of effort, especially for a long period of time, like that's what I think really builds your own like kind of like self-esteem and confidence, which then allows you to feel good about yourself. And maybe at times that doesn't do that, but I think over time that's what I've learned, one, impacts me the most. Because I would say like ever since I was like 4 or 5 or 6, like moving here, like I always felt that like I could accomplish a lot, but I do think that was because of the situation I was in growing up, immigrating here, like not speaking English, all of those things that at the time you could see as a negative. So yeah, I think that those things impacted me a lot, and I'm very grateful that it did in maybe the positive way, which is like I can do anything versus like that doesn't always happen, right? Some people could take that in a very negative way, like, you know, be very cynical or like my life sucks or like, you know, I can't accomplish anything. So I also think it's a little bit of a luck of the draw as well.
But it was your choice, because you could choose the same circumstance and say, this is a reason why things will be difficult for me, or this is a reason why I can overcome difficult things or whatever. The same exact objective circumstance, you can walk into either door, right? Either perspective door. It's interesting being in LA and being like a human like this, because it is a place that invites people to come here.
For sure.
Right? Like, people are from here, but a lot of people come here for a reason.
Yeah.
And it is a mixed bag of people who come here with like the strong roots and confidence that they can succeed. It's like everybody here seems ambitious, but their core confidence that you were talking about which is maybe like the center of our planet that people can't exactly see, but they can feel, is different for everybody. And,
for sure.
And it can grow from different things. Like you're just saying one way to get confidence yeah. was how I grew up and saw myself through. There were probably other ways for you to end up here, but you, that was your path.
Yeah, every path is different. And I think just what I've seen is like some of the more challenging times at a younger age just can lead to a very like positive state as you get older, because like one, you're grateful for those times because of what it taught you, and then also like in a way that, you know, you've been through more even though you're still pretty young. So I think you know, it's a balance of those things. I'm curious for you, like, when did you start getting into sports in general? Like, was that always like the path for you from like as long as you could remember?
Yes, because for my father, he didn't know how else to teach us anything besides sports.
Yeah.
So he put me in, I mean, he gave me my brother's baseball glove before I could write. And so now that really handicapped me in sports though, because I'm a lefty in writing, but he gave me my brother's right-handed glove. So it would have been nice if I was like a lefty in soccer, for example, growing up, but it's okay. I was still a left back. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah. But so sports were like the first language that he knew we would fall down and need to learn to get back up without having to intellectually talk to me about it. So sports were it for that. And they were great because you can put in time and get better at something. They were great because you learn that teammates are different than friends, are different than family, right? Like teammates, you share a common goal. And you don't have to be friends in the playground to have a good teammate. You have to decide the goal is more important than our differences.
Yeah.
So, you know, sports are, we could talk about why for sports sure. are great.
Yeah.
But they remain important to me, because what I'm realizing more and more in not competing as hard as I did at the Olympics level is that being capable in your body is really like, and how you feel in your body is a really important way to feel like you can handle anything in life. And it sounds so, I feel like it sounds corny to say that, but I feel that it's true.
You mean through the physical efforts?
Yeah, just seeing yourself healthily. Totally, yeah. It doesn't mean you have to be a winner at everything. Yeah. It just means to be able to like climb a mountain, to be able to like kick a soccer ball or whatever. Sure. It's like we're carrying around this bag of bones and fat and muscle and whatever. It's like we should be able to really carry it.
No, I fully agree with that. Two things. One is childhood sports, or like sports in general when you're growing up. Like even for me, I would say like that's like one of the most defining things of like my future, anything, work ethic or drive or determination. Like I feel like school wasn't really that for me. Like I was always good in school, but it didn't excite me in that way. And I don't think I learned because school was pretty easy for me. I think I learned more through like the not making the team when I was a freshman or like losing in the, you know, state semifinals or things of that sort, or like, you know, being the captain of my team, whatever it was, way more. And then now I agree with what you're saying, which is like I've seen, you know, as we've been building this brand, or as I've been learning about myself, which is kind of like a simultaneous journey of like learning about how our brand can impact the mental health space, maybe how a Nike did with like the physical health world. But through that process, like learning more and more about myself, like I would say entrepreneurship is like the perfect setup for like personal growth. Like you have to grow in some way, or else like you're not going to be able to get to where you want to go. And so through that, I would say like my physical health practices are all like, I realize just more and more it's all just like a mental thing, you know, that it's like just fortifying like how you feel. And yes, like it's good for your heart, or it's good for your muscles and all this stuff, but I do think the most impactful part of it is just like how you feel internally. And so much of that is like because you can control the efforts you're putting in like externally. And so, I definitely agree with that.
Well, something you said that, or so what I heard underneath it was like sports can always be hard, and they will always be hard, right? Like you could even be the best on the team or the best team in the league, and it will be hard, right? And I'm not saying school was never hard for you, but it feels like sports are a perfect place where like there's always a way to make it harder, or there's always a way for it to feel challenging. And it's so beautiful because it's not life or death, right? So you can commit to something fully that you know is not life or death, which is like, I mean, isn't that also why movies are great in a way? Because you watch people die in movies, yeah, and you can feel it so real and you care, but you actually do know they're not dead. And I feel like with sports, it's like you can care about this game as if it's life or death and you know it's not. And maybe with the entrepreneurship, like pursuits like this, it's like you care about it as if it's life or death. I'm sure, like, you care, yeah, but you know that it's a game, kind, yeah, of, right?
For sure. I mean, I think that's basically like everything, right? Like, it's if you really like zoom out far enough, like no one thing really matters that much. Obviously, right, it's hard to do when you're in the moment, but yeah, I agree. I mean, I think for me, it's just like, you know, the way, you know, some people are more type A or more driven. Some people have a more lax approach. And like, you know, for me, obviously I'm more on like the type A side. So I need like the balancing of all the other things. And like, that's where I need to improve over time. Like, I'll always have my drive. I don't think I'll ever have an issue finding that, but I think it's more like, but what is that saying to myself? You know, do I always need to be working harder? Like, what is the message I'm sending myself if I always think I'm not working hard enough or whatever? So,
oh, yeah, I'm like,
I think it's more like learning that side of things, which comes through life and life experience. And I think entrepreneurship or like sports at a very high level just forces you to learn that faster.
Right. So is what I'm hearing that you have challenged like chilling out, or what's,
yeah,
your,
I
like,
mean, for sure. I would say that, for a long time, I think I'm a lot better at it now. But that's been through a serious, like, process. I mean, I've been going to therapy every week for 3 years now, and it's been amazing for me just in trying new things. Like,
like what?
First, I would say, like, one, I didn't realize that, like, yeah, I'm not great at communicating about how I'm feeling or how things impact me, because I am more the, okay, it's fine, like, let's just keep, yeah, moving way. And I'm always looking for a solution to something instead of just like talking about something without a solution focus.
Yes.
two is like, you were saying like, what? I mean, there's a lot of things that I've tried to do now. So some of them are a little weird, but like, for example, you know, I would always be listening to stuff, like podcasts every time, like when I'm driving, like, or when I'm walking, or when I'm working out. Mm-hmm. So, like, now when I drive home from work, like, I actually don't listen to anything at all, which is, like, very hard, actually, if you think about it.
Yeah,
like,
you have to hang out with yourself.
Not calling anyone. Like, yes, usually I would call, like, 10 people.
Yes, me too. I'm like, yeah, that. Those are escape mechanisms, though, right?
For sure.
That's what I learned.
Yeah. So, or, like, you know, yeah, and obviously there's so many things still that I feel like over time I can improve. How much I'm using my phone, like, all yeah, these sorts of things, like, you know, when someone brings something up that like bothers me, like, why does it bother, like, you know, all of these things. And so I think these things take a lot of time to improve on, especially if like the way that you've been living for, you know, I'm 29, so like the first 29 years of my life is like all one way. Like, you can't just expect like 1 year to change that, 2 years to change that. And then you throw on top of it like a very stressful situation and trying to like grow a company and do all these things with it. Yeah, it's like you really have to know yourself so well, or else like you get lost in it. So I think that's it's been fun and exciting for me because it feels like a challenge in that way. And
well, it's cool to learn about the specific little things, because like maybe it's the athlete in both of us too, that like, I do very well with like actionable things, right? Like, if you want to get better at something, you want a coach or physio or someone to tell you like, do this action. And I think it's interesting because the things you're saying that you're doing are like, they're challenging your default setting, but they're also like little things. And I was told this thing that, like, if a ship wants to go to a different continent, like a boat, it just, which is how we all get to work every day.
You just have to turn it a little.
A little bit. Yeah. And I'm like, and I think that's so cool because sometimes, you know, especially when people are looking at people they want to be like, sometimes it feels like you got to 180 your life. But it is these tiny, tiny adjustments and then letting them, like, sink in. Like, you add one ingredient to a soup, it could change the whole soup. You don't have to add 10 ingredients,
for
you
sure,
know, or you add them over time.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And kind of like on that note, I feel like the common theme with a lot of like athletes that we've had on the show, especially like Olympians, is like, you know, it feels like the time where you're training and leading up to like an Olympic Games is like, you know, so long. Like it lasts for so long. You're working so hard. You know, you don't know if you're going to make the team or you don't know what's going to happen. And then you make it and then you're there and it all goes by like very quickly, right? It's like a short thing. You might only be competing in one or two things, whatever. And then after, you know, the story is very common that like big drop off, mm-hmm. you know, you don't know what's next. You don't know what you're going to do with your life. And it's like a scary thought for someone who has been so focused on one thing their whole life. One, was your experience similar? But then two, if it was, like, you know, how do you think back to that time in your life? Because I imagine, like, now maybe you're grateful for it, but it must have been hard at the time.
Yeah, well, it all starts with the ultimate distraction in life, which is, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I feel like when we ask kids that question, we are giving them a task that they will give to themselves, but we've ultimately assigned it to them by asking them that question as if it's so important that they will be chasing above all other goals until they get it or not. And when you talked about sitting in your car and being like, let me just not call these 10 friends, I do the same thing and have tried to hang out less with other, more with myself. But to have something that you're chasing like that, that is so moon-like goal, it gives you something to think about all the time. There's nothing more big to think about unless someone is like super sick or you're sick or some disaster, right? Yeah. This is the thing. And that's beautiful. It's purpose, but it's distraction too, right? From what maybe really makes you okay inside without these external accomplishments. So when you get there, what's interesting is that it ends up feeling like a cliff because you are told, and it would be unwise to think about the moment after because then you might not get there in the first place. You must only think about that. And then when you get there, what I think is like the biggest challenge is that really a peak in life should be more like the emoji of a mountain where there's an equal descent as yeah. the ascent. But usually we don't prepare or give ourselves the descent. And reporters or people at the finish line are literally like, what's next? That's yeah. the question they ask. Yeah. And then you're just catapulted into what's the next? What do I want to be when I grow up? And why didn't I know it yesterday? And why am I not already chasing it? And there's an adrenal fatigue associated with any peak in life. It's literally, it's like, it's why people get sick after a big movie premiere. It's like they've been, or after the Olympics, it's yeah. like they've been holding on. And I learned this term at Burning Man last year, not this year, and it was like the decompression. And it was basically like after people go to Burning Man and do all that stuff, they take a week or two to decompress and they honor that there's a like a decompression essentially. Yeah. And I think I was never told at the Olympics that like there's a decompression and that's about more than just what you did with your body. Because everyone knows like take a week or two off or whatever. But nobody realizes that when someone asks you what's next, you should say, I don't know, I'm going to absorb this. And we don't usually give that time to ourselves. Italy, I have something to share with you about Italy. So I have a mentor in the director of Luca, the Pixar movie set in Cinque Terre.
Yeah.
And Enrico Casarosa directed it, and he's an ultra runner. And he became like a creative mentor to me, and I helped him with some fun running stuff, and he shared with me that when he was nominated for the Oscar for La Luna, that was his short.
Yeah.
This was 10 years ago. He was so excited. It's his Olympics, the Oscars, right?
Yeah.
And he didn't win, and either way, it's his Olympics, right? He made it there. He felt that post-Olympic depression that you're referring to.
Yeah.
And he didn't know what to do about it. And when Luca came out, this is set in his hometown. He grew up there. It's really, you know, yeah. his heart and soul.
Great movie.
Yeah. And so good, right? And he didn't win again, and it's still a huge deal to get there. But he planned this time to have this ultra marathon experience in Cinque Terre a week later after the Oscars, and he invited me to go. And we went, and look, that's not everybody's idea of a decompression. Yeah. But the point was, he built in something to honor that there's a catharsis afterwards. There's some exhale.
Wait, so how long was that run?
It was a 50K, but it snowed. Wow. And it was so unusual because it's like this seaside town. Yeah. And
how did you even do 50K there?
Like, there's trails. So like,
but was there, but did you have to do multiple loops?
No, there's like,
one big enough.
You start in this town and you basically go into the mountains.
Yeah.
And you do this like huge mountain loop. And it was so wild because we started, it's like a sunny seaside day. And then like it started to kind of get like rainy, and then it started to get snowy. And then we were up to our knees in snow, and they were like, we haven't seen weather like this in Chiguitera since the 70s. And then they start kind of herding us off the trail, and we were like, what's going on? And we were kind of like kids. You know when kids are like in a gymboree party and the parents are like, we got to get them into the cake room or something, and the kids have no idea, and all of a sudden they're sitting and eating cake.
Yeah.
It was like all of a sudden we were finished with the race 10 miles early because the snow was so bad.
Yeah.
But I thought that was cool and mature of him.
For sure.
Right.
I feel like the decompression thing is actually one thing I was talking about with my therapist is actually – whatever you want to call the decompression thing, like you need something like that daily, weekly, monthly, yearly type of thing where it's like my daily one might be just like when I'm driving home, but like taking time off might be like my quarterly one or whatever, you know? And I think before I viewed that time as like unproductive or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think if you change the perspective of like, oh, you know, if you worked for 100 hours straight, like you wouldn't say that would be very productive because like you wouldn't be doing great work for that same reason. Like when you're not getting sleep or when you're not working out or when you're not taking a day off, like you won't be able to like do your best. So it's helped me a lot as someone who's like, you know, always trying to do more and more, realize that like that time is like just as beneficial, if not more. And that's kind of the only time that you can reflect on yourself and your own life experience or whatever versus like when you're working or like when you're running, like, you know, you're doing that thing. So you're so focused on it, which is good. Like you want to be focused on it. But like you said, in some ways it is a bigger distraction, you know? And so I think that's been very helpful to me as well. But that's awesome. Where does he live in Chiguitera?
Well, he lives in Berkeley, where a lot of the Pixar people live.
Oh, nice.
He's from
That's cool.
Genoa, Cinque Terre area. Yeah. And we went out. His family is still out there. And he's a wonderful human. I love when I meet people who are athletes in the arts or in these entrepreneurial spaces, because it is such nice permission that there's a vibration to this mindset. It's not just like you're an athlete or you're an artist. And like, I don't know, that's just been his, like, it's meant a lot to me to see him like exist in the world.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's in the Bay Area though.
Yeah.
And what you said about the like, the silence or the kind of, what I really think about is like, maybe we've spent so much of our life like reaching four things, which is great, you have to reach, but like what you're saying is like what happens when you sit. Well, first of all, it actually made me think, one time I asked my friend like, what is hanging out, like what is it to hang out, and you said something a long time ago in this one conversation where you were like talking about goals.
Yeah.
And I was like, I remember thinking that like whenever I go into a situation, my biggest mistake is that I'll always have a goal. And that's wrong. Like when you're hanging out with friends, you're not trying to have a goal.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't even have the goal to have fun. You should find whatever it is that it is.
Yeah.
And I think where I've gone wrong is when I don't realize that I'm in a situation that is goal-less.
Mm.
Whether it's like when because when you're hanging out with yourself, you're not like, who am I? You're just like, it'll come to you if you give it space. And I think I've created a lot of like difficulty for myself when I have mixed up the situations that require goals and the situations that I need to remind myself, there's no goal here. There is no goal here.
Yeah. I mean, I think some people have trouble with that. And then some people have trouble with the opposite. It's like,
yes.
They don't have any goals. And some people would say that that's good, but I think the balance of both is important. And striving for something is fine if you have the other side of it.
Yeah.
So that's what I found for myself. I don't know. That's just what I think. One thing I like that you said, I was listening to a podcast you were on, was, you know, this idea that a lot of times when we go through hard times, like a depressive episode or just like a time where we have more anxiety or just aren't feeling as good, it is sometimes a result of like actually like not accepting how you're feeling for a long period of time. So like pushing out your feelings, rejecting your feelings, and then your body is kind of shutting down as a result of that, because like you haven't talked about it or you haven't let it flow through your body. I'm curious what your thought was on that.
You're talking about like when stress manifests physically as pain.
Yeah, I would say like if anyone has a situation in their life where you know, they know there's something wrong there, but they're kind of like avoiding it, or they're like, it's going to figure itself out, or like, it's not even there, like, you know, type of thing. And then what ends up happening actually is like, your body will be like, no, like, you know, F you, like, this is like a big deal. And like, you let it go on for too long. And I thought it was just like an interesting way that you were talking about it.
This is not what you asked, but I think there's two pieces to this. The first thing is that the brain is a body part and it can get injured just like any other body part, and it can heal or be managed just like any other body part. And that's what saved my life after the Olympics, when I had this depression that was like, it was super high risk. Like, I don't know how to put this, but like, my mom took her own life. Her brother took his own life. Her mom was like, I was bound to have a dip in my life. And I didn't know how to handle it. When it happened, I rejected those feelings. And when I eventually got help, what was relayed to me quite simply and what saved my life was that actions change first, then thoughts, then feelings in that order. So we, and this is not what you brought up. You brought up, what I just brought up was, what if your feelings are bad?
Yeah.
What can you do about it? And it's the actions. And it's knowing that it's like an injury. It'll take time to heal.
For sure.
Not every doctor is going to work. Not every action is going to work for you, just like a physical injury, right? But I think what you're referring to is, what if you're in an incredibly ongoing stressful situation in your life? Is it true or is it false that that will affect your body and how you feel physically?
It is true that it'll affect your body. And then the more you let it go on without actually processing it or dealing with it in whatever way that means for you, like, the worse the effect on your body. Before we go, a couple final questions. One is, did you already do the 100-mile race?
Yes, I did.
Nice. And how was it?
It was crazy. I was given an opportunity to like enter this race that is one of the hardest 100s in the world, because it starts at like 10,500 in Leadville, Colorado. And I was not like trained for it, but I am a tank of a person. And I had like a crush on the opportunity, which is like the best way to describe it when someone is like, do you want to do this? And you're like, yes. And the coolest part about it was that I knew I could finish, and I'd made the decision I would like to finish. I didn't know how it would manifest.
Yeah.
And it felt like being in another time, because you are – okay, the coolest thing I learned actually, because I think this is like – well, okay, you feel like you're in another time because all you're doing is moving and you're like – mashed potatoes, yes. Person is sitting on the side of the mountain. Let me give them snacks, yes. Creek, water, drink, yes. Like, it's so, like,
weird.
Connected and weird. But what was cool was I had this pacer named Mikey, and he's actually running 100 miles right now as we speak. He has his 100-miler.
Where is it?
His is, I want to say Colorado, because that's where he lives, but if I'm wrong, then we'll...
Somewhere right now running.
He's literally running 100 miles, and he's wonderful. And, he's so great. And I was like, what is some advice you have for me? Because he's done a lot of ultras. And the best advice he gave me was that you need to make lots of decisions very quickly. And you cannot think too much about any one decision, because you're moving for over 24 hours or whatever. And you can't be stressing over, like, should I walk? Should I run? Should I mash potatoes? Should I jelly bean? Should I water? Should I Gatorade? You know, it's like, you've got to just make decisions, pivot, and keep going. And what was so cool about it was he was right. You don't have the energy to think too much about those decisions. And if ever you made a decision and you were like, that wasn't the best one, you can make another decision.
Yeah.
And like, so
Just move quick and don't think too much.
Just keep moving.
About it.
Yeah. And he was so right. But it was a really cool race.
How long did it take?
Man, so I ran the first 10, this would make me sound so silly. I ran the first 50 miles in 10 hours, and then I ran, and I was like in fifth place. I over ingested salt pills because I was like, these are like electrolytes. Mm. And I became very dehydrated. And so I walked the last 40 miles with Mikey through the night, and I ended up running like 27 hours. So it was like 10 hours and then 17 because I ran and then I walked. And I'll tell you, walking 40 miles through the night is such a crazy experience because it's like you're in nature's timeout because you have to experience every single mile that takes 20 to 25 minutes and you can't make it go by any faster because you're so sore, dehydrated. But that's you know sick. You can do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like what we might connect on with this is that we're high achieving people and we are, I don't know how you create your days, but I rarely give myself more than 90 minutes to go on a run. You know what I'm saying? Like I don't give myself time where
unlimited time.
And it was like, you know what? There was a time cutoff. So I did have to go a certain pace, but I was way ahead of that.
And what was the time cutoff? Like 36 hours?
So it's 30 hours, but I think it's 30 hours, but it's every aid station, they have a cutoff time. So every aid station, 50% of the people get pulled out because they don't make the next cutoff time. And there's aid stations every...
How many people finish?
50% of the people. Wow. So it's a pretty, like, race of
that's
attrition.
That's sick that you finished.
It was pretty sick. Yeah. And my toenail fell off, and I learned a lot. And I think if I really trained, I could win one of those things. And I don't know if I ever will train like that, but it was like... I think just to give yourself time to be in nature for as long as it took was like, it felt like a gift. Because usually it's like, our lives are so constricted, right?
That's awesome. Doing things that are really hard is like something I like personally. And I feel like helps like put everything in perspective, you know? Like when you're running that 100 miles, like you weren't really thinking about anything else.
No, you're purposeful.
Just like, yeah, like you're just... So it is something like, I've done some stuff, but nothing that crazy. But I've always like looked into like ultras and stuff, like this guy, Jesse Itzler, if you know him.
Yeah.
He does a lot of them. And like, that's really where I first learned about like the crazy world of what it could be. And some of those like just 24 hour type things are interesting, not even for doing the 100 miles in that time, but like no one ever even thinks like, oh, like, how much distance can I cover in like 24 hours? Like you would never even think that way. You'd be like, oh, this race is like 6 hours or 8 hours or something like that. But it's like all those dimensions I feel like would be quite the experience of like life. And
because it's not about performance. It's more about like what will it... You have to be present because it's... You don't know 13 hours in what you want to eat to keep your legs moving.
Yeah.
And it's kind of silly because you're like, Coca-Cola, mashed potato. Like, it feels so, like, unregimented in a way that is, like, it's hard, but it's so silly. Like, it's so silly.
Yeah.
What have you done or what do you
do? No, I've done, like Olympic distance triathlon stuff. But I don't know. I mean, I think, so I broke my hip skiing in eighth grade. So I have, like, a plate and, like, six screws and... Doesn't really impact anything, but I've never done anything like crazy distance because I'm just like, I'm all good. Like, let me not mess with anything too hard. But I've done some long stuff like that. Like, that's like the longest, and that's like 3 hours or whatever, maybe a little longer. So yeah, it's fun.
I bet if you did it and you were really within yourself, like, that's why I walked. Yeah. Mikey was like, you could probably run. And I'm like, I want to run like next month too. So I was like thoughtful, but I feel like if you did do something like that and you saw that plate do it, it would like unhinge you.
No, I agree.
You know what I mean?
I agree. I think I agree. So I'll do one.
Yeah,
What's like the shortest one? Like a 50K?
No. An ultra marathon is anything over a marathon.
Yeah.
So you could do 26.3 miles on a trail
Where, that's where I'll start.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would much rather do it on a trail though than like a marathon in the streets.
There's relay ultra marathons too, and that could be a good start because then you like have friends and you're passing a baton.
I'll ask you for which ones you think I should do after the last two questions that we ask everyone. One is if you could nominate someone to come on the show and share their story that you've been inspired by, whether you know them or not, who would it be?
Oh, that's a great question. The guy I'm seeing named Brendan Clark, because he has had the most unusual path to where he is. He's the head of photo video for Gap. He was like severely bullied as a kid and was a professional poker player and was a teacher. And like what I admire most about him that I can't say I'm as good at myself is his ability to like completely abandon something and pivot to something that feels more right. He had a feeling about the camera and he pivoted in a way that I feel would be really difficult for someone who is as successful as him.
Yeah, wow, that's awesome. Love that. That's a great answer. And final question, and we'll link to where everyone can find you and everything that you're up to in the show notes. But Alexi, what makes you mad happy?
Right now is being at an underground rave where there's like lights and people and music, but nobody's watching me. And I can wear a big t-shirt and I'm kind of anonymous, but I'm not alone.
Love that. Wow, that's a very specific, great answer. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. It was a great, great combo, and appreciate you sharing everything you did.
Thank you. You are a composed yet curious and vulnerable presence, and that is a rare combination.
Thank you. Thanks so much, and thank you everyone for listening, and we'll talk soon. Thank you guys so much for listening. It always means so much to us. Hope you liked the episode with Alexi. Definitely message her if you enjoyed it, if you have any other questions, if you want to hear more from her, if you have any questions for us, thoughts for us, you know where to find us. And until next week, peace.
The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism.